Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here too, because otherwise it wouldn't be nearly as much fun. I wouldn't have anybody I could tease. Not that she would do that either. Joan's, as you know, folks, is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
Hello to you. And I know you're still kind of having probably a little bit of trouble coming down off the high from last week, right?
Sure. Whatever you say.
Well, we were face-to-face. We did the show face-to-face last week.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Yeah.
Was it just last week?
Well, I guess you have
successfully. Seems like about a month ago.
I guess you have successfully come down off that high, apparently.
Right. There you go.
But that was like a dream come true for you, wasn't it, to be able to do the show face-to-face?
Yeah, sure. Whatever you say.
To be able to do the show and look at me, to be on a big-time radio show and look at me at the same time. It just doesn't get any better than that, does it?
I agree.
Speaking of folks who are, you know, legends in their own mind, have you picked up your copy of Bill's book, Bill Clinton's book?
Gosh, no, I forgot.
Darn the luck. I thought sure you'd have that by now.
No, I told you, I'm 0-2. I did not buy Mrs. Clinton's book, and I haven't bought Mr. Clinton's book.
Now, Joan, as a loyal Democrat, I would have thought you
would. Well, now you know I'm not a Democrat.
You're a mugwump, aren't you?
There you go.
Well, why aren't you going to buy Bill's book?
Well, I don't buy books. I tend to read library books.
Ah, so you rent them. You borrow them, I should say. You don't buy them, right?
I rent books, yeah.
Well, maybe it's in the library. You could go down and get it.
I have a feeling there's a long waiting list.
Would you be surprised? Were you surprised to find out that it was almost 1,000 pages long?
Well, I thought he might have had a better editor. I mean, I know he likes to write long and speak long, but I thought someone might have tried to rein him in.
That's too much. Not. That's just too much, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at one of the greatest books ever written here, as far as I'm concerned. It's the Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, and it's 1,100 words long. And I don't think Bill's book compares to that book.
Is it 11? You mean 1,100 pages?
1,100 pages long.
Yeah.
What did I say? Words. I meant pages. Yeah, it's 1,100 pages, and it's 224 years old. It's still being printed. So that'll tell you a little bit about that book. But anyway, it's just interesting that he would have such a long book. Speaking of another Democrat, let's talk about Mr. Kerry. That's who's on the top of the list of on page one this week.
John, that's right.
What's Kiplinger saying about John Kerry this week?
Well, we say he's about to make his move because it's pretty soon, I guess we believe in July, he's going to name his vice presidential running mate, and then the convention will be coming up. So
yeah.
He'll be back in the spotlight then.
That's the end of July, isn't it, the convention?
I think so, yeah.
The last week, I think, and that's in Boston, right?
Right, that's right.
Where the big dig is.
Oh, yeah. And, our favorite infrastructure project.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to name, and who is the odds-on favorite to be named the vice president?
Well, is there an odds-on favorite? I mean, a lot of people are talking up John Edwards, but there's also a lot of talk about people like Richard Gephardt as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure. What are you hearing?
Well, the same thing you're hearing, but I predicted, of course, now I have to say this. The guy who's making this prediction in a minute is the same guy who predicted that what's his name from Vermont? I can't remember. John Dean was going to be
Howard Dean.
Howard Dean was going to be the nominee for the Democrats. So you may not go by this, but I did say that once the moment Kerry became the presumptive nominee, I said, you know, it's got to be Edwards. Because
we'll see if you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I think Edwards has got some baggage that they'll have to deal with as a trial lawyer, but I do think that he probably is seen a little more fresh face than Gephardt is.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I think that's very true. And apparently, I've never seen him in person, but apparently, he's a really fantastic campaigner.
Edwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say.
One of the problems, one of the things that you point out, that Kiplinger points out this week, is that Carey's challenge is in defining himself. Apparently, America may not be sure who Carey is. Now, is that do you think that's valid?
Well, that seems to be the concern among a lot of Democrats, is that he has not defined himself in terms of an alternative to President Bush. You know, if there are people in the country who want Bush out of office, it's not enough to be voting against Bush. They have to be voting for something.
Right. Well, and you know, on the one hand, Mr. Bush has had a tough time in the last few months, and his poll numbers have been taking a little bit of a hit. But on the other hand, this hasn't exactly been great campaigning time for Mr. Carey, has it? We've got the war that sucks up a lot of the news oxygen. We had a whole week of Ronald Reagan, which basically they suspended their campaigning, and then right on the heels of that, Bill Clinton comes out with his book.
Right.
So it's really kind of been hard for Mr. Carey to break through, hasn't it?
Well, no question about it. That's right.
And as an example, Joan, yesterday, Carey was making his major health care policy speech in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. And CNN, I turned the television to CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, and only CNN was carrying it. And
wow.
The other two, MSNBC and Fox, were carrying one of the trials, you know, like the Peterson trial or the Bryan trial.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, the guy can't seem to break through.
No.
Which is kind of interesting. Do you think that some of the Democrats apparently think he's waited too long to announce his who he's going to make as the vice president? You think he has?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're saying that Kerry certainly doesn't think he's waited too long, which is obvious because he would have done it by now.
Right.
I think if he had announced his vice presidential pick a long time ago, then he'd still have the problem over the last several weeks of being outshone by other mm-hmm. media events.
Right.
So maybe doing it closer to the convention gives him, I guess, kind of a longer period prior to Labor Day,
right,
to be defining himself.
I think that's a good point, Joan. I think you're right about that. I think I don't know whether it was intentional, but I think it's going to turn out that he was smart to wait, because he really needs to get some buzz going, and that would be one way to get it going is when he announces his VP choice.
Well, and the thing about John Kerry, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
You were saying,
go ahead.
I'll save it for the next
Okay,
segment.
Hold on to that. We got a cliffhanger here, folks, and it's 20 after. We'll be right back, and I want to hearken back to a 1988 time of announcing a VP. That's coming up right after these messages. It's 20 after. We're visiting with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're back, 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. The small business advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, you were about to give us the cliffhanger.
Oh, yes. Well, now I can't remember what my cliffhanger was.
Well, as you're thinking about that, I'll go ahead and tell you what I was thinking about with regard to VP announcements. The famous one in my life was, infamous, I think it was on like Tuesday of the week of the Republican convention in 88. We didn't know who Bush's VP nominee was going to be. And then I was literally at home turning the television on. I was even a news junkie back in those days. And I was watching the goings on. It was probably 5:30 or 6. And I heard them announce who his VP was going to be. And my wife came running into the room shouting, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And evidently, without realizing it, I had screamed when I heard
you were lying prostrate on the floor.
When I heard that Bush had tapped Dan Quayle as his VP nominee, and I remember thinking, "Who is that?"
Oh, is that the noise I heard?
That was the noise.
I was up in Connecticut at the time, and that's probably what I was hearing.
And, you know, I mean, I don't want to beat up on Dan Quayle, but the point is at that moment, I was keeping up with politics pretty good. I didn't know who he was.
I don't think anybody did. Oh, you mean Quayle? Sure.
I literally did not know who Quayle was. And so my exclamation was not so much for me thinking that he was not going to do a good job as much as I just had no idea who he was. Why would he tap somebody that nobody had ever heard of?
Well, so anyway, and I'm sure you asked that many more times over the next 8 years.
Well, over the next four at least, because I think I do think.
Oh, that's right. Mr. Bush did not have a second term. I
do think that it was a mistake. I think, you know, with all due respect to Mr. Quayle, I think it was a mistake. I think Mr. Bush tapped the wrong guy, and because he did not help the ticket. And so now we come back to Mr. Edwards and Mr. Kerry. Will Edwards help the Kerry ticket, Joan?
Well, Edwards is supposed to be a very good campaigner, it'll be interesting to see. You know, he does bring – people always talk about regional balance on a ticket.
Right.
And he would bring that to the ticket. And he would, I would
regional
think –
regional, meaning because he's a Southerner.
Right. And so, yes, from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he would help – North Carolina. Or South Carolina. It's one of the Carolinas.
Yeah, it's from South Carolina, I think.
And you know, the South is the big concern of the Democrats this year. So the idea would be, I think, that he would help Mr. Kerry pick up some Southern states.
Right. Well, and one of the things that if you guys are correct, and a lot of people are saying this, that the election is going to be very close. You guys actually say it's going to be a cliffhanger. If it's that close, then it seems to me that there would be some contribution that could be made by a VP.
Right, to tip a state or two a certain way.
Right,
exactly.
Right. Because, I mean, it could be, it's going to be tricky. And the thing is, Joan, especially, you know, depending on how the economy continues to go, and by the way, and we misspoke, Joan, we sort of misspoke. Edwards is from North Carolina.
He is. Okay.
Yeah, he is in North Carolina. But anyway, The thing is that depending on the two big issues, the economy and the Iraqi war, depending on how those things go, it probably is going to be close though regardless. And I agree with you guys.
But here's another thing to think about in terms of the possible pick of Edwards. We're not just talking about the presidential race, but a lot of Democrats would like to see him run for vice president because
right.
of the possibilities he might offer in terms of helping to bring in a Democratic Senate.
Mm-hmm.
If he can tip a couple of states Kerry's way and there are coattails, then it's
right.
possible that in North Carolina, for example, you could have a Democrat swept into office as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, of course, remember that if that ticket won, there would be two open seats in those two states, Massachusetts and North Carolina.
Well,
right?
That's right.
So,
I don't know. Isn't someone running for Edwards' seat now?
Oh, is he not?
I thought he was up this year and was not running.
I didn't know that. Now, that's a piece of information I didn't have.
And I think that's the seat that Erskine Bowles is running to.
Is that what?
Well,
I'm glad you brought us up to date on that. I did not know that. That'll be interesting. And you know, some people have called for Mr. Kerry to resign from the Senate the way Mr. Dole did.
Oh, right.
Some people are calling. They're saying because he's apparently missed like 80%, 90% of the votes that he was supposed to have cast. And so some have said he's not serving the people of Massachusetts. Of course, I think the people who are saying that are Republicans.
You think? Yeah, I wonder. just wonder.
And I've forgotten who said that. But speaking of the races, though, speaking of Congress, apparently the Senate could be in play in 2004, but not the House. Apparently, the Republicans are pretty much locked up to keep the House. Is that what you see?
Sure, looks that way. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm hearing more and more. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Fed. You know, the Fed meets next week. The Federal Open Market Committee meets next week. We're going to talk about that. When we come back, we're also going to talk about taxes. We're going to get into some health issues, and we're going to talk a little bit about technology, and maybe even a little bit about Saudi Arabia. It's almost 29 after. I'm Jim Blassie. Actually, it is completely 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We're visiting with Joan Pride. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
streets are running and try to meet the masses. Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses.
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of two books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back, 34 after. Thank you for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, I want to move on over to some of the other stuff. But before we do, I want to stop on one thing. We're talking about politics. What do you make of these? Of all these polls? They're getting very interesting, aren't they? You know, back in May, in March, when they were doing polls, I didn't care about that because it was so far away. But now we're getting to within 30 days of the Democrat convention and another 30 days to the Republican convention. These polls are starting to maybe mean something. What do you think?
Well, and I don't know which polls you're talking about, but the last poll I saw showed the race in a complete dead heat and that the president's advantage on Iraq had drained away to where I think they're kind of at 47% to 47% at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So any little thing could tip the balance. You know, let's say a strong Nader candidacy or a weak Nader candidacy could mean one thing or another, or a good vice president pick on Kerry's part or a bad one.
Speaking of Nader, I saw where he just got approved. I think I saw that he got approved to be on the ballot in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
So he's fighting.
He's having his problems elsewhere, major problems elsewhere.
He's fighting his way around the country, though. So you're exactly right. And if the Kerry candidacy doesn't catch fire, then you know he could really have a significant impact. But you're right. I think the numbers are starting to look really tight, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And you guys call it a cliffhanger. It could very well be that. I think you could be very well right about that. Let's move over and talk about the Fed. The Federal Open Market Committee, folks, of our Federal Reserve Board is meeting next Tuesday. And Joan, you know this is the big meeting, right?
Well, in a sense it is, but I was just reading in the journal where the Fed, in order to keep the markets calm, has tried its best to sort of telegraph what it plans to do. So I think the market is expecting a quarter point increase in short-term interest rates. So that, I guess the point being that if there is a quarter point increase in the short-term interest rates, everyone isn't going to go bananas and be all upset.
Mm-hmm.
And further than that, beyond just the increase itself, they will be watching to see what the Fed's, I guess, language is surrounding that. I
think how they're leaning. They call it the leaning.
Right. What we're expecting to see is that some kind of language about looking at measured increases. And even that's going to be controversial because some of the Fed board members don't want to use that word measured because it thinks that it will tie their hands and keep them from being able to make bigger increases if they want to.
Right.
On the other hand, if you don't say that, you might frighten the markets into thinking that there's going to be some big interest rate increases down the road. So it's going to be kind of a very kind of a tightrope they're going to be walking.
Do you ever get a feeling that they're sitting up there in those meetings saying, okay, how can we have fun with the markets this week?
Right. Oh, gee,
can we say to have some fun with the market? No, I don't think they're doing that, folks. I'm just teasing. But Joan, the...
And Mr. Greenspan just got sworn in for another
he
term.
He did. The VP swore him in this week for what is this now, a fourth term?
Five-year term,
It's four-year terms. I think this
four-year
is his,
okay.
He's about to go into his fifth four-year term. I think that's right.
Okay.
The thing is that when I said it's going to be a big week, Joan, it's because of Jim Blassingame's prediction in January, in the 1st of January, on what would happen at this meeting. I predicted in January that they would have no rate increases all of 2004 until June, and in the June meeting that they would increase the rates, and then after that they would not for the rest of the year, at least until after the election was over.
One of your prediction is correct.
Well, that's right.
About part two.
Well, can't you just imagine the pressure that these guys are under right now, knowing that I predicted that? Huh?
Which is why they're about to do what they're doing.
Well, and what you got to understand is one of the FOMC members is a member of our brain trust, Bob McTeer, and he knows about my prediction. So I'm sure it's just rippling through their the organization
that's how it got
up
to
there.
Greenspan.
Yeah. And I mean, I really kind of thought maybe he might call me and check with me on that, but he hasn't yet, Mr. Greenspan. I mean, but the truth is the economy, the inflation's picking up a little, isn't it, Joan?
Yes.
Thanks in no small part to petroleum.
Oh boy, that's a big one.
Yeah, and healthcare, insurance. Those two, insurance and energy, are really picking up inflation, and so we have absolutely no danger of deflation anymore, and the Fed needs to reload with their ammunition, which means that they need to have a little more room above 1%, which is where it is right now. The Fed funds rate, prime rate, is at 4%, and so I think they're going to go, and I really can't say if they're going to go a quarter or a half, but it will be an increase next Tuesday. Quick break, 20 till. We'll be right back with Joan Pride.
I'll soon be with you, my love.
It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we've got Suzanne Mulvihill, who's one of our best entrepreneurial minds. She'll be talking to us about entrepreneurship, your entrepreneurship. And then Lynn Morella is one of our top experts on ethics. And then after that, Giovanni Cortolo is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He's in charge of small business for the U.S. Chamber. And then Lois Geller is going to talk to us about making sure we take care of our customers. And that's coming up in the show straight ahead. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, you guys got an outstanding website. Give it to us.
Yes, sir. It's www.kiplinger.com.
K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. Lots of good stuff you can do there. And they can subscribe to your newsletters there, can't you? To your weekly and your biweekly letters, can't they?
That's right.
And I keep saying newsletters because that's not what they are. That's what mine is. I just keep saying it that way. But the Kiplinger letter is the flagship. It's weekly. And then they have the three biweekly letters, which is the California letter, the tax letter, and then the agriculture letter. And then there's a magazine, too, isn't there?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
All right. And you can subscribe to all those. And they've even got a little opportunity there for you to get 4 weeks or a whole month, however you'd like to look at it, free to try it out. And I encourage you to try any of those. Also, there's a phone number to call, isn't there, Joan?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Joan, let's get back. And by the way, folks, please check out the website. Even if you're thinking of not thinking about subscribing right now, I think you'll enjoy getting to know their website at Kiplinger.com. And check out the free part there. I think you'll like that, too. Joan, let's talk about the economy just for a second. We were talking about the Fed meeting earlier. The economy is really doing pretty darn well, isn't it?
Yes.
Everybody I talk to is seeing improvements in their business, from little guys to big guys.
Well, that's good.
And so the economy has gotten its legs under it, so it can probably, I mean, my God, think about this, Joan. If they raise interest rates, if they doubled interest rates at the Fed, the Fed funds rate, it would still just make prime 5%.
Well, that's the thing. They've gone so low, they can't go much lower.
Right. They've run out of ammunition. They do use those interest rates, folks, to influence the economy. And so they need to reload. That's what we were talking about. So I do. But that's the good news. I mean, the good news is the economy is doing well. And I don't think we should look at raising interest rates, even though, you know, I never like to see small business owners have to pay more for their interest, interest on their money. Still, 5% prime, we can deal with that.
Well, and a small increase in interest rates might now could forestall a larger one later.
That's exactly right.
That was good.
No, you're right. And you're often right, Joan.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait,
but,
excuse me. I'm writing this down. Often right. Okay.
On this day in history. But the thing is they're not going to double the rate, folks. It might go up a quarter, might go up a half.
You just scared everybody.
Let's go over and talk about taxes, Joan. What's the news on taxes?
Well, there's this legislation, this big, unwieldy piece of tax legislation in Congress right now, and the original point of it was very simple, which was to eliminate an export tax subsidy that the U.S. is getting clobbered on because Europe went to the World Trade Organization and got permission to levy sanctions against U.S. exporters.
Right.
But in getting rid of that export subsidy, Congress has to figure out what they want to replace it with. They can't replace it with something that would still violate world trade agreements, but what they're trying to do is come up with something that would benefit domestic companies, domestic manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
But that, two things. Number one, that's easier said than done. And number two, people in Congress are seeing this tax bill as a nice big Christmas tree, and they're throwing all the presents they can under it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happens so many times, isn't it? The,
right.
The result of the bill, with all the stuff that gets tagged onto it.
Right, and the other problem, particularly in the House, is there is so much disagreement on how to provide tax relief for U.S. companies
mm-hmm.
that in order just to get this bill past the House, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee had to throw on just a bunch of unrelated, in one case not even a tax provision, unrelated
right.
provisions in order just to buy enough votes to squeak this thing past the House.
Well, and folks, now that's another way of saying, what Joan just said is another way of saying, two things you never want to see made, sausages and laws.
Boy, right? In this case, it's really true.
It's messy. You know, I'm sure it would be a wonderful civics lesson if I could go up or if you could go up and spend time seeing all these things come together. But it's also can be pretty ugly, too, can it?
Right. No question about it.
And how those guys sit through all that amazes me. And Joan, you'll be glad to know that apparently upper income small business owners have got some advantages with their retirement plans.
Well, that's a relief. Yes, this is really kind of interesting, and I guess you're referring to the individual defined benefit
right.
plan.
Right.
Yeah, this is very interesting. You can, if you're a sole proprietor. This is great if you're a sole proprietor. If you were to set up a typical plan, say a 401k or something like that, there are very strict rules on how much you can put in each year. Something like I think $13,000 or $14,000. But if you actually set up a defined benefit plan, you can put in, over $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is really designed for companies that have a lot of cash
right.
flowing through the business.
These are really rich small business owners, like I hope to be. I aspire to be one day, Joan.
And who would then, when you get to that point, you're going to need a nice big fat tax break, and that
exactly
this gives you one.
That's right. So I'd really kind of like this. I mean, this is another reason for me to work harder, Joan.
There you go.
I may have to cut back on your pay a little bit, though, in order for me to make this happen. You don't mind.
Well,
that, do you?
I think I should be a beneficiary in this plan. I should be a participant.
So are you planning on living longer than me? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you can make a contribution. No, you can make a contribution for me as well.
Oh, I got you. I said, well, okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some health care issues, and then we're going to move on over and talk about a little international events. And that's coming up after these messages. It's 10 Till. Joan Pride is our guest. We're back. 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, if somebody wanted to contact you and ask you a question, you let them do that, wouldn't you?
No question about it.
Would you give us your email address?
Well, you would write to, let's see, it would be AskKip.
AskKip.
Let me see. Well, you throw me a curve here. See, if you'd asked me this off the air, I'd have it already.
AskKip at Kiplinger.com, I think, isn't it?
I think it is, but I want to check that before I give something
okay,
out that's wrong.
Well, while you're checking that, I was going to just point out the next thing we're going to talk about, folks, is how some states are helping small business owners with health insurance. And Joan, you guys point out that Maine is one of those states.
Well, that's right. And this summer they're starting a new program, and small businesses will be able to get private insurance at a regulated rate, which I guess means a capped rate.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if I like that idea or not, John. We don't need the government to regulate the prices of anything. We need the government to allow us to band together and to aggregate our companies and the people who need health care in our organizations to aggregate them and negotiate better prices. We don't need the
government.
Well,
I thought they were already allowed to do that. I thought you could form pools.
No. See, that's the problem. See, big companies can do that. Mm-hmm. But little companies can't. But that's what's in front of the Congress right now, and it's passed the House 6 or 7 times, and we can't get it through the Senate. Thanks in no small part to our friend the arch enemy of small business, Ted Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
They're called Association Health Plans, AHPs. We need those AHPs very badly. And that, see, Joan, what that would do, that would allow my Chamber of Commerce and your Chamber of Commerce and a Chamber of Commerce in Boise, Idaho, and all those in between to band together and to come up with one big group and offer that to their members and offer the big discounts.
And then you could have the economies of scale.
But the problem is the interstate element of it. Because each state has their own rules, the interstate becomes a problem unless there's an overriding federal law that allows us to do that. And see, it would allow trade groups to get together, it would allow publishers to get together across state lines, et cetera, et cetera. And so we need that more than we need some state to control prices, which is what this is basically.
Oh, I see.
It sounds to me, but that's just me. Joan, let's move over and talk about retail. Talk on the top of H4. You guys report about some high tech vending, and you're going to be able to actually get a vending machine that's going to give us CDs and DVDs and cell phones.
I mean, look at this list: batteries, videos, tool sets, cell phones, memory cards.
How about a hamburger?
I wouldn't be surprised.
But that's coming, and also wireless credit card payments, you guys say, is going to revolutionize. This is some new retail elements, folks, including that it's going to combining retail and technology. Over the next 5 to 10 years, Joan, there's going to be some pretty exciting things to come about that's going to blend the consumer, the consumption of goods with technology, isn't it?
And all because of this whole idea of wireless technology.
Absolutely.
You're already beginning to see that with Wi-Fi, which is, you know, the ability to have your internet connection be wireless. Mm-hmm. But that's going to really expand.
And the other thing is the nanotechnology, the embedding of a value for a product in the manufacturing of it, so it can be scanned. But, you know, holographically and then transmitted wirelessly.
Yeah, see, that's still too complicated for me. I can't handle that.
Well, you're going to be handling it whether you like it or not.
You're going to have to, I guess.
That's right. That's right. You also say ATMs are going to be offering more services within 5 years. What's up with that?
Well, yeah, this is something I think banks have been working on for a long time, you know, beyond just getting cash and mm-hmm. making a deposit. I mean, thinking about being able to wire money or buy money orders, being somewhat more complicated transactions that now you have to stand in line and wait for a teller to do. It would be nice not to have to do that.
Right. And apparently ATMs are going to be a lot more capable of doing that in the future. Joan, we're going to have to wrap it up. We're coming up on the end of the segment. We don't have enough time to start anything else. But I want to thank you again for being here today. And I want to say that, and I'm being very serious, it was my pleasure to be able to do the show in front of you last week, because it's nothing's better than doing the show while I'm looking at Joan Pride. How about that, Joan?
Oh, wow. Well, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
Believe it or not.
All right, good. Believe it or not. Thanks, Joan.
Thank you, Jim.
See you next time. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.